Well, y'all, we're going to go ahead and get started.
Yeah, let's do it.
I'm Katie Lear, the Convention Committee Chair, and welcome to Tourism in Florida. What I'd like to do first is thank our FCB host, Ms. Diane Scalzi, for doing a great job of keeping us on task this morning. And since we're a little hard group to deal with, Diane, you've got your work cut out for you. Janine, I'm going to go ahead and turn this program over to you and Peggy.
Awesome.
And you all have a great convention.
Thank you so much, Miss Katie, and thank you, Diane, for being our host. Hi there, guys. I'm Janine Lee, and I am from multiple chapters, but this is for Chapter of At-Large members, Florida Council of the Blind, and we really wanted to promote tourism and things you could do all over the state, because, you know, sometimes you just don't know what's available to you. You don't know what you don't know. So we're really excited. We have most of our board here. We have John Richards, who is our treasurer. We have Peggy Carpenter, who's our president. Again, I'm Janine Lee. And then we have our president of our state, Sheila Young. So, and we have three amazing panelists. We have Mark from Disney. We have Christine from Universal and SeaWorld. And then we have Stacia Boyd, who owns a company, Q Media, who does museums throughout the country. And she's going to talk about audio described tours. So I'm super excited. Peggy or Sheila, did you want to say anything before I hand the mic over and get started?
Just that we really are thrilled to put this together. And, you know, I think so many times those of us who are visually impaired think, oh, we don't, you know, boy, I don't know if I want to go to one of the parks or go to one of the museums. I'm just going to stand around while everybody looks at stuff.
You don't know what's going on. You don't know what's available. You can't hear anything. You can't see anything. There you go, Peggy. You're back.
Oh, okay. Sorry. So we just wanted to have our panelists talk about what's available in the state for great experiences. So thanks a lot.
Thanks, Peggy. Sheila, did you want to say anything or... We'll get started. Okay.
Go ahead.
Okay, cool. So, format of what's going on in this room, guys. For those of you who are in this room and who are on Zoom, we're going to let our panelists talk, each one, for like 10 minutes, and then we'll have questions. And they have some things that you can feel. They brought samples, so you can feel devices. Some of them did. So, so they're going to talk, and then we can do questions. Okay? Cool. So whoever's starting, you guys have a mic, right?
Welcome. I hope you guys have been able to at least visit some of the attractions in Florida. My name is Christina Gilchrist. I actually grew up in Florida's attractions at Universal, Humble Beginnings, but it actually gave me my profession. I am technology throughout the parks, and technology has been slow and progressive, but they're getting into kicking more even with accessibility. And that's not just only our parks, but you'll see what, you know, Disney is doing, other attractions and museums throughout Florida. I mean, most of the attractions that you're going to see anyways, that's not even the theme parks, will still have your Braille guides, which you can access and get at any guest services throughout the Universal parks and the SeaWorld parks. I can kind of speak a little bit on both because I am currently over at SeaWorld. And they also look to always make sure that you have safety first. So most all the rides are accessible for you. If there is some that might not, if you can't sit up straight or hold on to something to grasp, they might let you know that, hey, it'll require that ankle strength to hold on to that, you know, that ride. Those guides will also state that. Not only that, the service dogs, there's a lot of areas within the park that you can actually go in and that they can take care of the water. They can also take care of any, you know, movements that they need to have. Which is very pet friendly. More and more now, especially with the Universal Parks, they want the experience to not only be the ride or the show, they want you to have that warm up, that queue area where they theme the queues, they're talking with you throughout the queues, they're walking you through the queues, so it's not just individual with a headset, but you'll have it throughout the queue itself. With SeaWorld, you actually have a ride accessibility program that you get at guest services, where they will actually give you a time, so you don't have to wait in line. So they did two different things here between the two parks, and they would tell you what time you can come back. So that way you can enjoy the other shows and other rides between that. Not only that, though, you're actually gonna see a lot of things have kind of changed. You might have already witnessed with the COVID that happened. So items became more mobile. And on the mobile apps that you have, there are features of the parks too that will talk with you. Not only that, and that's between both, they'll have apps for SeaWorld and apps for Universal Parks. They have the ability to pay through that app on your phone as well. So if you've got that tap capability, and then of course order through the app. So the app could tell you what they have as options for food. And not only that, you don't have to wait in the food line. You can just go and pick up at a pickup window. So they've tried to make and cut out lines as much as possible, especially in our water parks. Like if you go to the water park at Universal at Volcano Bay, you can tap and it will tell you what time to come back to the ride so you can walk right on. But now the dry parks for Universal will keep in a very themed area because we do have the Harry Potters, that you can experience what they're theming through their explanations and through the tactile walkthrough of these queues. So they've tried to immerse more as they design the rides so that everyone can enjoy them. But not only that, as you go through, we're always looking for feedback and we're always looking to advance technology. And through that, to be able to have an ease of use, an ease of experience, and always make sure that we're thinking for any kind of angle and any kind of personality that's walking in there. So don't hesitate to give feedback at all. We do appreciate it and look forward to that too as well. I work, of course, a lot on kiosk systems, their point of sales. We do on the mobile ordering as well, where that you can actually go up to, as we're creating, you walk up to the kiosk, and if you don't have a phone, you can order through the kiosk while it talks to you. So those are technologies that are coming up and out, and you'll see that throughout the parks, and that's not only there. If you've actually went to the Cedar Fair parks and Carowinds, they have those certain things as well. So that way you can purchase tickets through a mobile app, online, through audio. You can also walk through the accessibility programs of the computers and of the phones as they keep expanding. There are some areas where they'll take and they'll guide you to the ride. They'll make sure that this ride is, you'll have to be able to kind of compartmentalize your walking stick, or they'll hold your walking stick until you get off the ride so that it doesn't get caught while the ride is going between things. So that's the same thing with the dog. Your service dog can be taken care of and watched. They have the ability, it's almost like they have a child swap, they call it. They say, no, it's not to actually change your child with another child because you're tired of yours. It's something where one person can kind of go ahead and watch the animal or the child while the other one's riding the ride. So they do have that capability as well. You just let them know, even at guest services, and they'll tell you, here are certain areas that will take care of all those needs. I'm here throughout this morning, but I want to also pass it on to some of my other counterparts, and I'll see if... they're going to draw a number. Here you go.
All right. Thank you. Good morning, everyone. My name is Mark Jones. I am, what am I wearing today? I'm wearing a purple and white checkered shirt and salty grayish hair, glasses, middle-aged, and I am the leader of our accessibility and services for guests with disabilities work at the Walt Disney World. Oh, yeah, for sure. I lead our accessibility and services for guests with disabilities work at the Walt Disney World Resort. And on behalf of our nearly 70,000 cast members, employees, crew members, and Imagineers, it's my pleasure to chat with you this morning a little bit about what we do for our guests with disabilities. Obviously, for purposes of our conversation today, I wanted to spend a little bit of time talking about the services we offer for those with visual disabilities, some services that maybe you've heard of, perhaps some, though, you've not. So I thought it would be helpful to share some of this with you. And then I believe we're going to have some time built in later for some Q&A. So happy to answer any questions later if you have any. I think service-wise, the one I really want to kind of focus and start on is we offer a pretty robust audio description-based service. The audio description service is designed to provide you as a guest with information about our outdoor environments. So as you're walking down, let's say, Main Street USA at the Magic Kingdom, being able to understand all of the environmental things around you, understanding the design of the buildings and the architecture, etc. In addition to the outdoor-based description, we also offer attraction-based description. So if you're riding on, let's say, Pirates of the Caribbean, being able to understand all of the visuals within that attraction. This is all delivered through a proprietary piece of hardware that we loan to guests for the day. It's something that you can use existing headphones, earpiece, or you can actually plug into directly if you have your own, something you'd prefer to use yourself. You can plug directly into our device. It's a standard headphone-style jack. The device that you'd be using is tactile-based with buttons that you can navigate through various audio menus to pick and choose the information you want to receive. If you need to know where the closest restroom is, for example, based on where you're standing, it can do that for you. If you'd like to know where you can get a churro, it can do that for you as well. So the device is something you borrow for the day. We just ask for a small deposit, make sure it doesn't leave us. But the device is audio description-based, but the device itself is available to provide other services. So it's one device that does several things, including audio description, as I described, as well as assistive listening for somebody with mild to moderate hearing loss. And then it also provides on-screen captioning for those individuals who use captioning. So it's sort of a one-stop device that does all of those things. And would love to have, if you're ever out our way, a chance for you to experience the audio description service. We work in partnership with the National Center for Accessible Media up in Boston. They are our partners in creating and writing the content. And as you might know, they are pretty involved in motion picture and television-based description. So they've been a great partner of ours for many years. Some other services for those with visual disabilities. We offer braille materials. We offer large print materials. We offer a portable tactile map as well in a booklet format that will provide you an understanding of the different areas or zones of a particular park so you can better understand how Main Street, let's say, is oriented and where certain things are. It's a booklet, again, you can borrow for the day, much like our audio description device. We also have stationary braille and tactile materials for you. Each park has a number of stationary braille, large print tactile maps, which are in strategic locations that allow you to better understand the orientation of the park and where certain things might be. And this is at all of our parks: Magic Kingdom, Epcot, Disney's Hollywood Studios, Disney's Animal Kingdom. We also have these style maps at our sports complex, which is the ESPN Wild World of Sports Complex, and also at our shopping and dining district, which is called Disney Springs. So these stationary maps, we are working with a partner based in Europe, and these maps are layered in a way to where it not only provides braille and large print information, it also provides tactile information about the design and shape of buildings, paths, and walkways. So pretty robust stationary map that we've started deploying and replacing our old fleet with these newer style. Epcot currently has the new style. Magic Kingdom will have the new style here in the next few weeks. Just a couple of other just points to mention, and I think you all are aware of this, but we have lots of guests who visit with us who have service animals for various types of disabilities. Service animals are welcomed. Welcome guests to our property. Are really free to go with their owner to almost anywhere. There are a few exceptions. We have a couple of locations, for example, at Disney's Animal Kingdom, which are animal-based exhibits. Although service animals will be docile and do their thing, we also know that wild animals may not. So putting both of those groups together may not be the best idea. So there's certain places at the Animal Kingdom that service animals, we don't let them go, or we all caution the owner about going in certain areas. We have a couple of bird-based areas, aviaries, that we don't necessarily want service animals in, but we know that there may be a need for that. And then we also have at our attractions where we wouldn't want to put a service animal on, roller coasters, those kinds of rides. We have an option for you to either allow a member of your party to stay behind with your service animal, and then when you return from the ride, you all can switch and the other person can ride without additional weight. Or we also, at our high-energy rides, have a portable kennel option that we can set up for you in the load or unload area. So if your group all wants to travel together or you're traveling by yourself, you can place your service animal in the portable kennel. The cast member working on the load unload area will keep their eye on the animal while you experience the ride. So that's another option that you may not have known about, and one I wanted to make sure I mentioned here. I think that's a little bit I think that's a little bit of a picture of what we do. We, of course, offer services for all disability categories, mobility, hearing, visual, those who are neurodivergent, as well as service animals. And our website is pretty robust and is all screen reader and large print and large font friendly. So any information you're seeking, the website is always my best suggestion. And I can certainly answer any specific questions later as we get into the Q&A portion. So I'm going to turn it over to my third and illustrious colleague.
Mark, while you're doing that, can I pass around the sample that you brought so they can feel it?
Sure.
Okay, thanks.
I'm gonna start right here.
Okay, he's going to start. Okay, cool. Go for it, Stacia.
And it's, yeah. Yeah, and essentially what that is like, and we work with those in the museum community as well, this particular device is purpose-built. It was built for people with disabilities, and I want to say thank you to Disney, because you have to really, in the museum industry that I work in, it's really important when you have people with huge resources that can blaze a way that then some of these smaller museums and smaller entities can follow. So I am Stacia Boyd. For those of you who were in my earlier presentation, that was the Audio Description Initiative about live performing arts here in Central Florida. My other company that I've had for 20 years, we serve museums, galleries, state parks, national parks throughout the state and throughout the country, creating mobile tour content for those organizations, and we specialize in audio description, accessibility, and ASL. That's one of our specialties. So we have worked with every kind of organization, from teeny tiny little museums that have a staff of 1.5 up to Kennedy Space Center, creating audio description content. And one of the things with those types of organizations, number one, with museums, there's a lot of confusion. I think I've said this before, that most people don't know what they don't know. And the number one thing that people don't know about audio description in museums is that there's a difference between an interpretive audio tour and an audio described audio tour. So what happens is someone will contact and say, do you have an audio described tour? And they'll say yes. And then the person with visual impairments or the person with member of the blind community shows up, and it's an audio tour, which doesn't give you any information about what's visible. It doesn't give you any information about guidance or wayfinding. So whenever you're requesting or contacting any organization in the state of Florida or anywhere else, asking what their accessibility features are, make sure that they say, if you ask for an audio described tour, ask them to describe what it is to you, because chances are they might not know what they're talking about. One of the things, going back to the difference between large organizations with resources and smaller organizations with smaller resources, is that staff education and staff and volunteer training. The training programs at Disney, and I used to work for Universal years ago, are very robust. Most of the time, the staff people that you talk to have been trained in accessibility. Now, does that mean they're going to have a broad understanding of what the blind community needs? Probably not. Because, for example, one of the things that we teach when we're working with the museum community is that a lot of times it's the same thing. It's like, I will bet good money that Disney's website is accessible, but everybody wants their website to be accessible. And some of the smaller organizations, it'll have gone through a WCAG test or something. It's like, oh, yeah, it's completely compliant. The problem is, yeah, the screen reader works, it reads the screen, but they haven't placed the information logically. Or every other screen has a gazillion pop-ups, or you have to click through 17 different screens to find the accessibility information, or it outsources you to a different thing for your ticket purchase. There are all sorts of little things that become these little tiny barriers to going to some of these smaller, more accessible museums. But with that, I want to talk about the ones that I think are great places to start. First of all, any national park in the United States, especially in Florida, if it's a national park, National Park Service, U.S. Fish and Wildlife, anything of that nature, these folks are doing a lot in the accessibility space. They have created an app, an audio description app. It works with a screen reader, but they are trying to bring on every single park, at least their visitor center, with audio description. The U.S. Fish and Wildlife and the state parks, most of them are trying to do the same. So if you're going to go someplace and you want to look at doing something in a national park, go to the website, find the phone number if you can. If not, ask in advance. Ask them if they have an audio described tour component in some sort. I can also give anybody the app address for the National Park Service audio described content that they have right now. Also within museums, because it's like there's hundreds, thousands of them, also small attractions, finding out if they have audio description, it is a phone call. Sometimes they're not going to have it on their website the way they should. I always recommend that you call. And every organization now, there are different technologies at different organizations. So, for example, the one that Disney uses, that thing is robust. I cannot recommend it highly enough. We've worked with it at Holocaust Museum Houston. We've used the same device in Alaska. We've used it in North Carolina. It's a great device. But there are a lot of other devices out there as well. Some of them are strictly MP3 players that are hyped up, and that's a strictly audio program. Others have remote triggering, some via infrared access, some via Wi-Fi beacon technology. The technology is changing so quickly right now, and almost every organization that we work with wants to be fully accessible, and they're trying to find ways to do it that fit their budget, solve the issue, and can be deployed pretty quickly. So I wish I could tell you that there was a one thing that all museums are using. I can't tell you that. But I can tell you that nearly every museum that I have ever encountered is right now, if they don't already have audio description, they're trying to find a way to add it. So going back to museums, if somebody's going down to someplace in Miami and you're setting out your itinerary for the time you're going to be there, contact the organization, ask them about audio description. Make sure that they are clear that it's audio description you're asking about and not general accessibility or general audio tour. The other thing, too, when it comes to museums, a lot of museums are trying, and Florida Association of Museums is actually starting an initiative to try and bring on every museum in the state of Florida to have a robust accessibility for both for people who are blind. They know it's a literal blind spot for them, so they are working very hard to fill that gap. And one of the things that helps them do that is requests from the community. There is still that chicken and egg problem where a lot of museums say, it's like, well, we don't want to spend all of this money because we don't have very many blind patrons or patrons with low vision. And it's like, well, why not? It's because you don't have anything for them. You don't have audio description. You're making their spouse or their child or their grandson be the person who is your non-paid assistant at your facility. So when you call, make sure you ask them for that, and then make sure that it is actually an audio-described program. I was the last speaker of the three of us here. Janine, do you want us to take questions, or what would you like to do next?
So we're going to take questions. I just want to add one thing to this. I wanted to speak about live description in theater as well, and movie theaters. So if you go to AMC or Regal or Century or whatever chain you go to, when you buy your ticket, you can ask for one of these receivers. These, I call them earboxes. I don't know the official term. We can ask one of the panelists, but they're earboxes. So if you want to watch a superhero movie, or if you want to watch Twilight, or you know, something like that, you can have the movie audio described to you as well. In movies, in live theater, we are making strides in Florida. You know, there is this one in Central Florida company that I've been working with, and they're like the chicken before the egg, and I think they are getting the egg before the chicken now, because they are focusing on the blind community, because if the blind patrons will come and the sighted people won't come, then that's really great. So I just wanted to say that there's also audio described theater options. You just have to ask for them. I know websites are hard and tickets are hard, but anyway. Okay, so does anyone have any questions for our panelists? And did anyone not get candy? Okay. Anyone in the room have questions?
Hi, this is for, I guess, both the theme parks. I'm Brian. Is there any talk, or is there audio description for your live shows?
Brian, hi. Mark from Disney. We've had some really good, robust conversations around doing that. We have live shows They are not impromptu shows. Many of our live shows are scripted or canned shows. So those which are scripted or canned do have audio description if it's on a time code. So kind of a technical right thing, but if the show runs off a time code, it's running off the track, the technician starts the show and it runs. That's something that we can do with audio description. If it is a live show which has starts and stops and it's not always the same show every time, those are ones that we are still trying to figure out how we might do that. But a good question.
Okay. I know there's a woman that's, I think, two front down from you that can probably help you with that.
let me pass the card. And over here for the...
Yes. So as you go to the, like he says, the impromptu shows, there are, when you actually go to let's say, plan your day, so there's a capability of planning your day, and you can, it is a cost for a guide. So that individual will walk you through everything as the show is happening as well. That is, of course, a cost at this moment, but like they're saying, they're kind of becoming more and more as we're trying to kind of invest between them, between Universal and SeaWorld. But there are capabilities of having, especially when you go to Universal, you can plan for that guide, and they can walk you through even front-line service and what everything is going on, explain everything, so they're kind of your personal guide throughout the day.
And Brian, that would actually be something that a great place to have this conversation would be at something like Florida Attractions Association annual conference. I think that'll, we just missed the one in May, or at IAPA to have a conversation about that. It's another
Stacia,
one.
Stacia, what does IAPA stand for?
IAPA, somebody to.
It's the International Attractions and Amusement Parks Association. It's actually where Disney, Universal, SeaWorld, Merlin, which is Legoland, they go to purchase. Basically the rides, the engineers they meet with for designing those rides. Bounce houses are there, family entertainment centers, and actually the chairman of the finance and IT committee. So a lot of the technology is where I come in.
Yep, another question. But I'll answer while you're taking the mic over there. One of the things with those organizations is to have that conversation with leadership. Here's how that can happen. And going back to what my biggest preaching thing is that most people don't know what they don't know. And once they can see that, you know, again, an organization with massive resources, they can figure it out on their own. But there's hundreds and thousands of attractions in Central Florida that have shows. This can be a simple solution. It can be solvable. Janine, you had a question right there on your left.
Yes, right here. Wait, sir, I have her. And then you're next, sir. We can hold it down because it's really loud.
Yeah. Hello. My name is Joanne, and I'm from the Pinellas Council. And I have a question. I don't know if Janine would be able to answer or one of the panelists. For the past couple of years, when I go to the theaters and ask for the audio or video description device, I get it. But 95% of the time, it doesn't work. I've talked to the managers in many theaters. Many of them have been very gracious and helpful in saying that, yes, we're dealing with technology issues and we're working on getting it fixed. Of course, there's the one or two that are very not so polite. My question is there somewhere I can go over their head to get the issue addressed, and who would that be?
I know the answer to that one. Yeah.
Okay.
The problem is there's two parts to that question. One is how can I solve it right now because I want to go to the theater, and how can I solve it for the future? So how can you solve it right now when you go to a theater and the device isn't working? Number one is call ahead and tell them you're coming. And let them know, say, I'm coming, test this thing, I want to know. And then have the thing you need in your back pocket. For example, it's like, what are some of the theaters called? There's AMC, AMC Lowe's. If it's an AMC theater, somewhere on that website is going to be the corporate email address. And that's the thing. And then you make a record of it. You say, I went to this show, I've gone to this theater four or five, six times. By the way, you're going to send that when you do reach out to that large corporation. They're going to have somewhere, somehow, a Department of Diversity, Equity, and Accessibility or something. Find that person and make a complaint. Because they don't want to look bad. And also right now, there are several lawsuits that have been settled. And one of them was, I want to think it was either in 2012 or 2016. I can't remember which one. But there was a question for these movie companies, who's responsible for the audio description? And what they determined was that the theaters, the venues, the film theaters, they're responsible for providing and maintaining the equipment. The producers are responsible for creating the content. So if you go to a theater and their technology is not working, the law has been settled. They are supposed to provide it. They are supposed to make sure it works. So call ahead to make sure it works before you get there. Once you're there, if you encounter a nice person, make sure you give them plenty of time to test it or whatever. But if they give you grief, document, record, video, whatever, send it to corporate and say, this is what I just happened to me at your place. And hang on one more.
So I wanted to add to that.
Go ahead, Janine.
Okay. So for me, when I go to the movies, it doesn't always work, and you have to watch all the trailers because there's no audio description on the trailers. We're working on that. The audio description project through ACB is working on that, and the narrators are working on that, and Roy Samuelson has been fighting so hard, and Joel Snyder and Carl. But until your trailers are done, and it says a red wave passes, like for the Coke or for the Pepsi, you don't know that the transmitter works. And then you have to walk out and get it. And at that point, you've already missed 5-10 minutes of the movie. So then they normally issue passes. So for movie theaters, it's a little tricky. With theaters, live theaters, again, do what Stacia said. But then there's still encounters problems. We just finished a big festival, and in one of the theaters, it's staticky, but staticky was better than nothing. So we're trying. It just takes time. So, Mark, did you want to reply?
I think what Stacia said certainly spot on, and Janine, you as well. I think another thing, kind of looking at it from the theater ownership, for their business, a lot of this comes down to prioritization as far as employees are going to be really good at providing services that are frequently requested. So I think that becomes an opportunity, for the group here is request services every time. Have your friends request services every time. The more a business is asked to provide a specific service once a week, twice a week versus once every 6 months, I think businesses will make it a priority and will do more in trying to ensure that their employees understand how the technology works. Because I bet you 9 times out of 10, it's the technology's fine. It's the employee that doesn't know how to turn it on. That's the issue. And how do you ensure that they know how to do that is to be one who asks for it constantly and push the business to say, hey, this is important. We have a regular flow of guests asking for this. We need to make sure this works. And even one further, if you have a good relationship with the theater or you go frequently, offer to go and be a part of a meeting, a team meeting, a meeting to be able to talk about how important these services are to you and your family and your friends. And I think that goes a long way as well. So I think stuff you guys know, but I just wanted to mention that is the challenge, I think, for lots of businesses is folks asking for services that are very infrequently used, which unfortunately moves it well down the priority list for folks being comfortable in how to issue it out.
Yeah, this is Peggy. I would definitely agree with that. Now, what I find in theaters is I frequently get the one for the deaf because they don't know the difference. They hear audio and they think, okay, you need the one for the deaf and or hard of hearing. And they, so they give you the wrong one. And of course, you really can't, do anything about it till you find out that it's not working. But anyway, what I have suggested to the theater in my area is, why don't I help you put like a AD on the ones for audio description so that the employees aren't the only ones that have to help with that we can actually help ourselves. So anyway, just a suggestion.
Okay, so you wanted to respond, Mr. Paul?
I did. There you go. Thank you very much. This is very quick, but it's not my idea, it's Dan Spoon's. And what he suggested and what they do is when they go to the theater and they get their AD device, they ask the person who is giving them for a cell phone number that they can use from inside the theater. And then when they discover that the device doesn't work, and that happens often, and I think the gentleman is correct, it's employees, it's not the technology most of the time. But when it doesn't work, they just call that number and they say it's not working. Come bring me another and make sure it works. And that works. And they get another one and it does work.
And that's, Judy, I could tell you a little bit more too. So International Attractions Association, Amusement Parks Association, is about 10 miles of convention space the week before November. So you might have heard that coming to the town. And what they're doing is they're going to these thousands of vendors that are developing these technologies or bringing lanes to the bowling alleys and such to basically partner and to invest in this capability. But you know, just like Mark said, more and more of these requests obviously will get the heads of business to say, hey, we need to invest in that too as well, money.
And one of the things, real quickly, and I know that a lot of these answers that people hear, like I said, there's always these solve the problem now and the future one, because a lot of the answers are ask harder, ask again, ask more, be more prepared, you do more, you do more, you do more, and we might listen to you if we feel like it. I understand that. I know that's a lot of what the suggestions are, and that's why I think it's important to break things down between solving the problem now, what's the easiest way to do that. I like Jim's suggestion, and Dan, of course Dan came up with this, but you know, absolutely, get somebody's phone number so that when you're sitting there, especially for those of you who have service animals, we all know how hard it is to get out of a darkened theater when you have a service animal, make sure that you have a viable way to get a hold of somebody so that your problem is now their problem. They have a client in their theater that needs services right now. So in the immediate circumstances, and there is something to be said for customer service. I mean, we are pioneers of customer service in Central Florida. We should certainly know better that if a customer comes to you with a problem, your job as an employee is to solve the problem. And I think that that's an important thing to remind people. Give them a heads up. Let them know you're there to help. Let them know that educate people as best you can. But at the end of the day, making it work is not your responsibility. It's their responsibility. The things that these organizations are doing to like make things more accessible in the future are going to be amazing in the future. But for right now, it's like somebody wants to see the show, you know? So we do understand that. And again, most museums do, and especially organizations that have well-trained staff like these guys' places do. When you say, I have a problem, that staff person is going to say, how can I help solve it for you? So please ask the staff people to solve the problem.
So can I ask a personal privilege? I don't know the hands and my eyes are back, so he's going to be the mic runner again. But I have a personal privilege question for SeaWorld. For SeaWorld, I have the pass, the accessibility pass, and I have friends who come here and we visit and we love it. And there are certain rides that because we are visually impaired, we can't go on them. They say it's due to manufacturer, but then the 4 or 5 year old child that's with us can go on it, but we cannot. It says you cannot. So how do we go around that, and how do we contact people when our disability pass says you can't go on it?
So there is one ride that is like that. It is Infinity Falls.
It's
per the manufacturer, and it will state it that they can go on it on the ride. For the ones that cannot see where they're swimming to, in case that they end up falling out of the ride, so the 5-year-old can see where they're going to, that is the manufacturer's requirement of that ride. So as a safety guide, they don't ever want to put your life at risk. Mm-hmm. And because there's metal and such that are on those tracks that it's riding on, that was the reason why that manufacturer had put that out there. So that is the one ride. Obviously, they're putting this in as they're completely continuing on to expand to make sure that they don't have that situation necessarily on the rides. But that is the one ride at SeaWorld.
Okay. Yeah.
That's a good question.
That's my question.
And I do have a number, too, for Universal. Like, if you ever wanted, if you're at Universal, you have any issue, you just call this number, and they'll take care of you, too, if you cannot find an employee. So I can share that as well.
Awesome. Thank you. Okay, so Dan's going to be the mic runner now, and I had my personal question. Thanks.
My question is, what website or where would we go for state parks that are handicapped, accessible, like Risch State Park? I know they're probably still not being rebuilt yet, but some parks that are directed toward blind and disabled folks.
I do not know the exact the actual website, but I do know the Florida State Parks, I think it's flstateparks.gov, but I'm not sure. So just Google it, but you go to the master site, and then you do the a search for accessibility, and they should bring up everything that they have. Every park with and the park system and the national park system pretty much follow the same pattern. They have their master list, their master website. Then you pick your park, then you click on that park, then you find out what accessibility features they offer. Now, a lot of them will do it where it's, you found it? It is the, floridastateparks.org/accessibility. So very simple, floridastateparks.org/accessibility.
Okay.
And for those parks, again, there's a lot of range. State of Florida is not as robust as some other states. They're not as robust, certainly, as the national system, national park system is. But they are sincere in trying. So if you go to the individual parks and you find one there that doesn't have what you need, call. Call, call, call.
There's a lot of places, I know, there's a lot of places that are just undiscovered for us.
Right.
That offers swimming pools and camping and all this. They're specifically, you know,
yeah,
tailored.
Yeah.
So I wanted to add also, for those of you in this room that maybe not don't know, it works for Florida and other states. I didn't know about this, and I learned about it at the leadership convention, conference, whatever it's called. If you are disabled or have a disability or whatever, you can get a National Parks card for free, and it lets you in all over the United States and some museums. So when you go to a national park, you just ask for the card, and they give it to you, and your party, up to three people, can go with you for free. Yeah, so I forgot the website, but if you just go, like if
NPS
you're going hiking.
NPS.gov.
Thank you.
Very simple.
Yeah,
NPS.
So it's free.
NPS.gov.
It saved us $20 when we were in Tennessee, so I was very excited. Any other questions for our amazing panelists? Did everybody get to touch Mark's device? We can get it and pass it. It's the device you use, and some people came a little late. And yeah, get it.
Yeah.
It's the one that you can use at national parks, some of them. Stacia has used them in other states when she, because she does tours, and then we use them at Disney.
Let me jump on that in a second. Yeah, let me jump on that. The devices themselves. So Janine, to answer your question, those are called receivers. So if you go to a theater, you're asking for an accessibility receiver or something of that nature. That's what those, it's a receiver, a receiver, a receiver. At any organization, you ask them for your audio description accessibility device, audio description. Again, always clarify the difference between audio description and hearing impaired, because people have a tendency to confuse those. What are some other things?
I want to hand it over to Mark too, so you guys can come up here, maybe perhaps to.
Yeah, yeah, we can.
Yeah, in addition to the device that's going around, as mentioned, that's some proprietary hardware that was developed with a third party and is being used elsewhere outside of Disney. So pretty slick. The one that's going around the room is a shell dummy. It is not live. You're probably pressing buttons like, well, it's not doing anything. It's not active. It's just more to get a sense of what it feels like and the tactile buttons that exist. If you're interested as well, I did bring a few other tactile and braille-based materials. Nothing for you to take, but if you just kind of wanted to come up to the table at the end and get a sense of these are examples of things that we do offer for sort of rent, things you can borrow for the day at no cost, small deposit, that if you're interested, you can come take a peek at them. I'll have them here at the front table when we wrap up.
It does. You get earphones. And when you go to Disney, I'm not sure. When I've used it, it's a $25 deposit, and they give it right back to you when you check out.
Yeah, it has a standard headphone jack, so you can use provided headphones, one single ear earpieces, or you can plug in your own if you have something you prefer. It will work because it's a generic jack. Yes, we got really clever. It's called Disney's handheld device. Super clever, right?
Disney what? I'm sorry, I missed it.
What?
Disney's handheld device. Okay, all right.
Super clever, right? Disney's handheld device. Can't get that wrong.
Okay, one last call for questions.
Yeah, I have a question.
I can take my mic. I can do
okay,
that. Hold
thanks.
On a second.
And we have no raised hands in Zoom.
Okay, thanks, Diane.
I was wondering, who makes the decision to give audio description? I know you have movies and series. Disney Plus works really good. I like that. But who makes the decision to decide which content you're going to audio describe?
I got that, too. You got it, Stacia. I got that one, too.
Well, you want to start while I go ahead and start?
Yeah. So the movie producer and director decide. The producer decides. But the problem with that is, let's say I go to the movies and I see Captain America. And then they give it to Hulu or Netflix or any of those streaming devices. Or they put it on HBO. Now, HBO does it now, but okay, so I went to see Rocket Man, and I went to the theater, and it was audio described. And then when it came on HBO, there was no audio description. So they have to choose to keep the audio description when they put it onto the television, and don't get me started on how many hours are only required. So, it can go away, so you have to like ask for it because it's there, but the producer decides and then they have to keep it with it. Now Netflix sometimes re-records all the audio description that they had because they want their own people.
Yeah, and there's a couple of things with that, and I wish Dan was here, because if you run into Dan Spoon, if he's around this weekend, ask him, because he can really give you the lowdown mm-hmm. on it. But it was a result of a series of lawsuits, discussions, settlements, etc., where basically they said, okay, here's how many hours are required to do it, but then it got into this contractual fight back and forth between the producers and the streaming services. So a lot of times what we've discovered is that the producers will produce the audio description, but then whoever owns that piece of content doesn't transfer it over to the streaming services. And then the streaming services, if they're going to offer it, they have to recreate it. It becomes a fight. And right now there is a lot more audio description. It is becoming a lot more common and accessible. But I think it is because there are people who are demanding it. They're getting so much exposure for having it that more people will contact these organizations and say, it's like, hey, why isn't it here? You had it in the theater. The more, and again, it goes back to that whole thing, ask harder, but the more people contact the major streaming services and with a complaint saying, it's like, I know it was in the theater, why can't I have it on my television? The decisions are being made by things that have nothing to do with accessibility. They have everything to do with money and contracts. So it's not an arbitrary decision. It's that kind of decision.
Stacia, this is Sheila.
Oh, go for it.
Hi, Sheila.
Hi.
Hey. Is Clark Rockwell there? Because if he is in the room, he could certainly answer that question.
Clark is not with us, hon. He's,
no,
he's not in this one.
He's not in this
okay.
one. He didn't come.
Okay.
We have another question. Oh, did you have something more, Sheila?
No, that's all. Thanks.
Okay. Follow-up question.
Yeah, it's about the video players on the apps of like Netflix and Disney Plus and different ones that I listen to on my iPhone.
Uh-huh.
Some of them are pretty hard to use. I don't know if anybody else has found
yeah.
that issue or not.
Yeah, that's true. Some are easier than others, like Disney Plus, Netflix. So we have access to like 10 streaming services. Acorn's not as easy. Hulu is not very good. Netflix is kind of easy. Paramount is a little tricky because you have to look under it with Amazon. And with Amazon Prime, when you look for those, I wish there was a way that you could just search for the shows with audio description, because I scroll and I look and I'm like, oh, I want to watch this series, and then I'll click it and there's no audio description, but there's closed captioning if I'm deaf. So yeah, it's a thing. So if you email them, then maybe they can fix it. Yeah. Yeah, he fights for spots. It's just, yeah, you just gotta keep at it. You know nothing about us without us, and we have to fight for it. So I think we have like 5 minutes left, so I wanted to talk about Calm really quick, and then I think we'll sign off Zoom, and then you guys can go to the front and touch things. Sorry, Zoom, you can't touch them. Sorry we didn't make it that so you could. And I'm sorry you didn't get candy, but if you were here, you'd get candy. Okay, so again, you are at in this is Florida Tourism, and I'm so thankful that we had Mark from Disney, Christine from IAPA, and SeaWorld and Universal, and Stacia from Q Media. Thank you guys so much for being here. CALM stands for Chapter of At-Large Members Florida Council of the Blind. So if you don't have a chapter, we would love to have you. We meet virtually, and we do information sessions, and we really want to build friendships and bonds. So please feel free to email us at calmfcb@gmail.com. And we'd love to have you. Peggy and John and myself are so thankful that you guys, and we have a new vice president, Sherry, are so thankful that you took the time to come today. We're so grateful. And I think we'll do this again next year, and we'll get some more companies with more information, because I think this went really well. So I really, really appreciate you guys. Thank you so, so much. If you have any questions, we have a table in the exhibit hall, and you can email us. I'm Janine Lee again, and thank you guys so much. Did you guys want to add anything to end, panelists?
I just really want to thank the panelists so much for sharing their expertise with us and coming in person and wishing I could have been there, not just for the candy, but, you know. Anyway, thanks very much to our panelists, and thanks for everyone that attended.
Yeah. John, did you want to say anything, our treasurer? No, he's very quiet. Sheila Young, did you want to say anything to our panelists?
Thank you all so, so much. It was such good information. I really appreciate it. I wish I could be there too.
Yeah, me too. Okay, so we're going to sign off of Zoom. Thank you so much, Diane, and we will catch you later. Please go to many more sessions, and if you guys want to touch things, they're in front, and I have more candy, and then come see us at our table.
Yep, come on okay. Up front. There's some things up here from Mark, and thank you all.
Thank you, guys.
Thank you. Thank you, everyone.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you very much.
Thanks, everybody.
Yay.